Hello, my name is Robert Bruce. I'm a financial journalist. With me today to talk about the constitutional review of the ISC Foundation is Sir Brian Nicholson, one-time chairman of the Financial Reporting Council, and these days a trustee of the ISC Foundation, which the trustees are responsible for the governance and the oversight of the IASB, though thankfully not for the technical detail. Brian, perhaps we could begin by providing an overview of just what the foundation does and how it's structured.
Okay, yes, you're right. We were established back in 2001, and the IASB was established at the same time, of course. And you're right, our primary responsibilities are in oversight, things like strategy, appointments, and also financing. We have to provide the money for the organisation. And also later on, and no doubt we'll come back to that, is the question of the monitoring board, which sits above us and now is responsible for us, public authorities, in fact, to whom the trustees are themselves accountable.
So the makeup of the trustees, the role of the trustees, who are they and what precisely do they do?
The trustees are a very wide-ranging mix of people from around the globe, former finance ministers, some central bankers, regulators, chairs of companies, users of accounts, a very, very wide bunch of senior people.
And how do they go about the oversight part of their responsibilities?
We meet four times a year for a couple of days. We meet in different parts of the globe. We are a global body. And we keep a very close eye, as I said, on the overall strategy of the organisation, which we work obviously with the IASB itself on. But we take a very close look at the due process. There's a due process oversight committee, obviously with 21 trustees. It's difficult for all of us to meet. We meet with the board. We have a dialogue with the board on all the issues they're dealing with. We make certain that they are acting in the public interest, that the due process is followed, everybody is consulted, and that's all very, very carefully laid out. And then we also have a nominating committee because we have to decide who is going to be on the IASB. And there's a little part that almost gets no publicity, but quite important, is with the material you're producing, you have to have education and you have to have publicity, and the trustees handle that.
The nominations committee presumably is also currently looking for a successor for Sir David after his years.
Indeed. I've drawn the wooden spoon, and I'm head of the nominating committee, and we are in an open and transparent process. We've been quite clear publicly about what we're doing, and hopefully there will be a white smoke signal sometime in the summer, autumn.
There have been points in the press where people have been critical of the trustees and their oversight responsibilities. How have you strengthened that?
Yes, that's a fair point. And there were quite a number of criticisms at the start, back in 2001 in the subsequent years. And perhaps not surprisingly, it was a new organisation, we were feeling our way. So we have listened very carefully to what's been said. And the situation has been transformed in the sense that we actually now win awards for transparency and accountability, which we certainly wouldn't have won a few years ago. In fact, we won the One World Trust Award back in 2007. But there have been a number of specifics that people have raised with us that the trustees have listened, have dialogued with the board, and the board has changed its procedures at our request. For example, the board now does cost-benefit analyses, feedback statements. People said, look, we put in an input, we want to know what the board's response. We don't want just to know they said yes or no, but why they said yes or no. Others said that when a standard comes in, everybody knows that standards are never universally approved. There's a general consensus, but there are some people who say, okay, we'll go along with it, but we're not sure. But there are cases where issues of very hard principle are involved. The board has to choose one route rather than another. And those who want the other route have often felt aggrieved. What we're doing now is saying that on all major standards, after 2 years, there'll be a proper review. And if, in fact, it's demonstrated that some of the criticisms were right, then the standard can be reviewed. So these are very positive major changes to the procedures. And now I go around and about a lot in London. My colleagues go in other parts. So there's a lot of trustee outreach, meeting with people. We no longer get issues on the board's process. So I think and hope, without being complacent, that issue is now behind us. The one that remains on the table is the one we will be discussing and have discussed, which is the issue of governance, but that's a different issue.
Can we talk a bit about the constitutional review itself? I mean, there's always been some criticism of the governance and the accountability of the IASC Foundation and the IASB, in part because, as an independent body, it tends to act independently, and that doesn't necessarily go down well with everybody. How have the trustees responded to the review?
Well, what's happened there is, and you have to go back a little bit in time, because when the IASCF was created back in 2001, I think very few people, including the then trustees, thought that within less than 10 years, 120 countries would be using the standards. And of course, this immediately raises issues of governance, because we were, in our creation, a private sector body registered in the state of Delaware in the US, run out of London. But once the European Union, all 27 countries, decided to take our standards, obviously they have to go through a process, but once that process was completed, they would become European law. It became slightly odd that a private sector body, even if we have all these trustees from around the globe, was creating law. So this immediately raised the question of, what about accountability to public authorities? We carried out a strategic review to look into this issue, and at the same time as we were doing that, people like the SEC, the European Union, the Japanese FSA, IOSCO, were themselves looking at the same issue. We all came effectively to the same conclusion, that the trustees need themselves to be monitored by public authorities. This would preserve the role of the IASB as an independent standard-setting body, preserve our oversight role, but we would no longer be what might amount to a self-perpetuating oligarchy. We chose our own successors. So the people who become trustees now have to be approved by the monitoring board. The monitoring board also have, as the name implies, rights of monitoring what we're doing, specifically ensuring that we ourselves, like the board, are acting in the public interest. So they have rights of dialogue with us and seeing what we're doing, rights to make suggestions to us, and all the things that are appropriate for a monitoring body of public authorities. So what happened then was that we came to our constitutional review. And of course, once we came to constitutional review, which takes place every 5 years and was due anyway, we had to ask ourselves the question, how do we handle this issue of a monitoring body? And it was clear that the constitutional review normally takes 18 months to 2 years, but there was much public demand for a monitoring body earlier than that. So that's how it came to be created at that time.
Do you want to talk a bit more about the monitoring board and how it works and some of the people who are on that board?
Yeah, obviously there was a dialogue between the trustees and the bodies that now form part of the monitoring board. But of course, we can't create our own monitoring board. I mean, it's slightly odd. As our chair of trustees said, man can't create God. So in the end, it had to be their decision, the public authorities. We as trustees obviously gave our input, and in the end it was decided that the bodies would be the European Union, represented by the Internal Markets Commission, they're up at the very top, likewise the chair of the SEC, the chair of the Japanese FSA, the head of the technical committee of IOSCO, which deals with these issues, and to make certain that other countries outside the G20 were represented, the chair of the Emerging Markets Committee. So that formed the initial body of authorities to whom we now answer.
And so you've got Mary Shapiro on the
Yeah, indeed. Uh-huh. And what's been quite remarkable, and which we've been very appreciative of, is that we've had three meetings with them since the creation of the monitoring board. They're fully engaged. The principals turn up, which is very important. But they've also, apart from the big picture, been willing, where it was required, to go into the necessary detail to see that they can perform their role properly. So it has, and let's hope it continues this way, been a highly constructive relationship in that we no longer find ourselves in the position of saying this is what we did and why we did it, and people would say, well, of course you'd say that. We now have an independent body, and of course, if we don't do it right, they are quite right to tell us we're not doing it right. Hopefully that won't happen, and the mere existence of the body and the regular dialogue that goes on will ensure that the public authorities and through them governments are happy.
Excellent. The second part of the constitutional review, that's been recently concluded. What do you cover in that?
Well, every 5 years we carry out such a review, and it's quite right because you are really in a position of continuous improvement. You're not dealing with the tablets brought down from the mountain. We're dealing in a world in global economy that's constantly changing. So we review ourselves. And we listened very carefully to all of our stakeholders. We held round tables in three different parts of the world, in Tokyo, in New York, in London. We had widespread consultation. And of course, before you get to the point of a constitutional review, you already know some of the issues. You've been listening to your stakeholders, so some of the agenda's already there. And what we agreed to change this time, some specific things, there'd been a lot of argument that although the board should be independent, it should not have unilateral control over its agenda. We already had input from the trustees, but now every 3 years we're going to carry out a full public consultation, round tables, discussions and so on the agenda of the board. That's new. Then a lot of people have been very concerned that in convergence and going for a global body, there should be an assertion that the board would operate on creating standards based upon principles. So that is now in the Constitution. Then there was also quite a lot of concern that investors' interests were not adequately represented to the trustees. So we've taken action there with the new advisory council and a subgroup of that, which brings a wider group of investors together. So we're reaching out to that community, our primary community, more closely. We also enshrined the primacy of investors in the Constitution. Then there was an issue that had come up caused by the fracas that we had with the European Union over the financial instrument standard going back, the earlier version, going back 2 years ago. And that was caused us to have to put in an emergency procedure ad hoc. What we've done now is to enshrine that in a sensible way in the Constitution, so we know how to happen, what to do if there's a crisis. The other thing that, of course, emerged was that the global nature of the trustees means that the work of the chair of trustees has become much heavier, outreach, consultation. So we've created two vice chair positions. And the principle is not exactly said this way because there might be exceptions. The principle is that Asia, Oceania, North America, and Europe, there'd be three positions, a chair and two vice chairs, and each would get one, so that there was a proper global representation. And finally, it sounds like a little bit of a nit, but some of these nits are important. Nobody knows. When I say what you do, and I say I'm a trustee of the IASCF, people go blank. But if you say I'm involved with IFRSs, they understand. So we're going to change the name of the organisation from the IASCF Foundation, what a mouthful, to IFRS Foundation.
And there have also been calls for further enhancements to public accountability. How much further could you go, or would you feel it would be useful to go?
Well, this is always going to be a question that's on the table. It comes up in any body like ours. Our position is pretty simple. it is not for us to make the decision about the level above ourselves, the monitoring board. It's for the public authorities to decide how best they will monitor what we're doing to ensure we do it in the public interest. Obviously, we'd expect to be consulted, and I'm sure they would consult us, but in the end, it's their choice. If you say, where do the trustees come from on this? I think the central gravity of the trustees is that they would be perfectly content if the body was slightly wider than it presently is and brought in other stakeholders. But of course, the people who are presently on it, if they decided to do that, would have to consider how to maintain an appropriate balance so that stakeholder representation wasn't distorted in one way or another, and that the bodies that came on board were committed to the principles that the present monitoring board members are committed to, which is to set globally high-quality accounting standards and to have that done in an independent way.
Sir Brian Nicholson, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.